Hi. Guys, Mick, are you there?
Hey all, this is Mick.
Hey Mick.
Good morning. Is that Vipin?
Yeah. I'm sitting right next to two loud people. I have to go into a conference room. Okay.
Good morning, Stan.
Zoom it. Zoom.
Okay, I love these meetings, but you know, I'm getting to the point where, let's see, I've got to have Rocket Chat open, I've got to have my meeting invite open so that I can get the phone to work, and now I've got to get, and then I get the Zoom thing to work, and you know?
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be a lot easier if it just sort of like all worked together?
Exactly. It would be an integrated system. Hey, there's your idea. Now
wait. I thought there was a company that made those sort of integrated communication systems. You know?
Yeah, I had that feeling too.
Thanks for that. We should all go back to WebEx.
Oh, sorry, I forgot. I also have to open the Google Docs for the meeting notes. So.
And by the way, I didn't see my email hit the airwaves, but basically I had said that I had inserted a diagram, state diagram.
Yeah, you sent that around. It was in the Rocket Chat for sure.
Yeah, I did. I had to use the belt and suspenders approach, I guess. Oh my God. So I think I'm going to just open the document that I had sent around. I mean, the document that I had created, I mean, not created, but modified.
So I'm just going to use the Rocket Chat. That seemed to work really well in the TSV.
Yes, it does. But, you know, they don't have the sharing problem. I mean, they do, I guess. They have the agenda up on the other thing.
Yeah. So who else do we have on? So I see Vipin, Stan, Ram, I see Manolo.
Yep, that's me. I work in Oracle as an architect, playing with blockchain and Fabric for the last several months. So I joined to listen in.
Well, welcome.
Thank you.
And there's one more phone number on there. I can go ahead and put, where is this?
Zoom is blocked.
I put in the chat, just the link to the meeting notes. And just a reminder, we are all under the antitrust policy that's consistent with all Hyperledger meetings. So. No competitive information and behave yourself as far as antitrust things go. All right. All right. So last time we left this, Vipin.
Yes.
We were going to go through your state diagram.
Yes.
So before we do that, though, we're missing heart.
You will be missing him, I think, because he's at BPACE, I think.
Okay.
Because
so he won't be here today.
All right. Yeah, he told me that he was attending BPACE. You know, the one in Stanford.
Right.
Which I actually I wanted to go to also, but unfortunately.
Okay, what's that? Yeah, that would have been nice. That's a good workshop.
Yeah, but they normally publish all their material, so
yep.
It's very good that way too. You can actually go back and look at the stuff.
All right. When Hart gets back, at least I'd like to. So let's for the beginning of our next meeting. I want to sit down and spend the first half hour probably just basically planning out what we're going to do for the next quarter and make sure that we're making good progress. The discussions we've had in here have been fantastic, but I'd like to start making sure we're making progress towards some deliverables for our master, Mr. Jagadeesan down there from Cisco, who's, you know, driving new communication standards for us. So I feel like we need to give him back something into the architecture working group as kind of a deliverable out of this. So we should start focusing on that. All right.
Master, I feel more like your slave.
Whatever.
Well,
all right. So Vipin, what should we be looking at?
The last bit, which has got the diagram. In the supply chain use case that I distributed before, and I am actually quite
got
constrained
it.
Because I'm doing this over my tablet because Zoom is blocked, everything is blocked.
All right, so I just posted the link into the Rocket Chat as well
so
as the Zoom
it's
chat.
At the bottom of the document. I have actually inserted the JPEG in there, but you can also, there's also a link in the document to the actual JPEG.
This is the one you got out of the Wikipedia.
No, it's not the one. No.
Okay, because the link that you posted in Rocket Chat earlier was...
No. That I said, you know, just to show what is factoring.
Oh, okay, got it.
This is sweat and blood and tears.
Got it. Okay. All right.
Okay.
So you want to walk us through this then?
Okay. So let's talk about this for a minute. What are we looking at here, right? It's basically the factoring business, which is it is not a typo. It is $3.3 trillion a year, okay? So that's according to certain estimates. A lot of it is under the covers, so nobody really knows the scale of the business. It's pretty simple, you know. I'm a supplier. I supply somebody, buyer, material, goods, services, whatever it is. And then I don't get paid for a while. So I have invoices, outstanding invoices from the supplier. I mean, from the buyer. I mean, that I sent to the buyer, sorry. So I gather those invoices. So first of all, I have a need, which is money right now, because I want to keep my business afloat. I don't have money. I don't have cash flow. I need money to do something else. Some other, you know, I need to continue to make stuff or to procure stuff so that I can sell it. But I need financing. So one of the things that I can do is to gather the invoices that I have from various buyers. And then I can put them out, offering them to the list of factors that I have an outstanding relationship with. There is, the factor has certain matching rules. Say, I will only buy invoices that you have outstanding against certain companies or certain amounts of money or, you know, stuff like that. And then it's a bunch of invoices that belong to different buyers are put up for auction, put up basically as an offer, offer invoices to factors for financing. And the factors see the invoices at that point and they bid. And the bid has to be accepted by the supplier and then the invoices get financed. We're not going to go into the other side of the equation, which is after the invoices are financed, now the factors own those invoices and they can collect. There are a couple of ways in which they do it. One is directly collect from the buyer, or they collect using the supplier as a channel. But I have marked in blue the two sort of transitions, state transitions that cause privacy changes, right? The first one is offer invoices to factors. And the second one is factors bid. So in the offer invoices to factor, until that point, only the supplier has access to those invoices. And of course, the individual buyers do have access to the invoices. But the factors do not. And only when the supplier has made that transition will the factor see the invoices. And of course, it has to pass through that decision box, which is whether they match the rules or not. So that is the first, privacy exchange that causes the privacy to change. That means the factors do not see the invoices, but once that particular state transition happens, then they see the invoices.
Okay. So can I just feed that back to you then? So what we're talking about is the factors are essentially buying future compensation in these invoices. Each of the factors has a set of criteria for the kinds of invoices that they would like to purchase. So even though the invoice is, in a sense, an agreement between a supplier and a customer, the factor needs to be able to see into the details of that in order to make sure it matches the rules that whatever purchasing rules or guidelines that they have, right?
Yeah, and also this might involve even matching with the purchase order from the buyer. Right.
Okay, so then what's the scope of the information that would be used in order to match that rule?
The scope of the information will be who is actually the buyer, right? Because I will not buy an invoice that if I don't trust that the buyer will be able to pay, right? So if you go back up, it is, the invoice in a legal sense is an assignable document. So that assignable document is now it's a conveyed to the factor once the bid is accepted. So it is a legal thing.
Great. So then the supplier, you probably also need to know something about the supplier's ability to deliver.
Well, presumably, the supplier is somebody who you have a relationship with, and you have a certain amount of trust level with them. But you're right that in the acceptance of the offer may be other conditions, like things like if the goods are not, like, let's say they send 100 widgets and the total bill is for $10,000 and only 80 widgets are accepted, then you obviously have only $8,000 coming to you. So they will, the factors normally apply certain rules to finance the full thing, first of all. Second, mm-hmm. they would look at certain past history to see if this kind of transaction has resulted in, problems in the past. So they will then decrease by that amount, or have an ancillary clause that says that if the buyer doesn't pay them, that the supplier themselves will pay them. There are various clauses that could be in that bid and offer. It is not just the invoice. Now the invoice has been encumbered, right? I mean, it has now got the factor has got rights on the invoice. And of course, there's a double spend problem because the supplier can offer the same invoice to some other factor, which can cause that problem. So there is a double spend thing there. But the privacy thing that is happening there is that the supplier has access to those invoices, the details of those invoices, and the purchase orders, and the supplier chooses to share that in the offer so that they can get financing for those invoices.
Okay, so let me up-level this then, just to make sure, again, to sort of come back to something that we can actually drill into on the privacy concerns. So there's an agreement between the supplier and the buyer that is represented by this invoice. So this invoice is a contract to deliver goods at a certain price from the supplier to the buyer.
No, the invoice is the other way around, which is once the goods are delivered,
the buyer will pay eventually, right?
Okay. Yeah, it may even be after the delivery is over, because invoice need not be paid right away, right? I mean,
yes,
so that may be another criteria that the factor uses. Are the goods already delivered, and has the buyer indicated that, satisfactory delivery has been made?
So again, I'm trying to push this up a little. So basically, there's an agreement between two parties. That has some private information, or that has some information about those parties. We want to involve the third party in this case. The third party is essentially going to purchase some rights from the supplier. The right to essentially collect the final quantity for the invoice. And the supplier does this because they need short-term capital, and so they're essentially selling future value in order to get short-term capital for it.
Yes.
So then the interesting characteristics in this case is that the rule matching has to take place before we know that the invoice would be of interest to the factor.
Well, the rule matching can happen. That's why I only put the rules may be running on the factor side. So that's why I put the blue thing between the supplier has invoices
right.
to factor and the match factor rules. But
the point is, and the reason why this is a privacy issue is that until the factor owns the invoice, has purchased the invoice, there may be information in there that they're not allowed to see.
No, that's not what it is.
Okay. Well, that should be the problem we're working on, though.
The problem we are working on is this. The factor has no knowledge of any of these invoices until the supplier has put it out to bid.
Well, then why is this a privacy issue? Then why is this a privacy issue? Because once it goes out, the factor can
see it. No. But before that, so there is a privacy transition in that line coming from the supplier offers. Supplier has invoices to factor to the match factors rules. Before that, the factor cannot see anything about those invoices, even though they are on the blockchain. Right?
Why would I put them on the blockchain?
Well, even if they are in the sense that if any detail about them is on the blockchain. Because, you know, when you're modeling the supply chain, this is only a part of the thing, right? I mean, basically, you have the purchase order, then you have the invoice, all of that stuff is happening. So here, at this point is when the factor sees the invoices for the first time, even if they are on a shared public ledger with privacy constraints. That means until then, only the supplier and the buyer has access to their exchanges. Nobody else has. I mean, if you want, you can do, you know, depend, you know, if you say nothing is on the blockchain, then we don't have a problem. You know, it can be modeled in a totally different place. But the point is, once we have all of these things on the blockchain, then you can reveal or conceal certain types of information, documents, and so on, but at the same time, produce a very strong audit trail if there is a dispute in the future, which, you know, and everybody agrees to the truth of what is there. So that's what I've assumed. Maybe I'm barking up the wrong tree. I don't know. You tell me.
Well, I mean, you end up, one of the concerns is, and again, I'm kind of going into the problems we're working on right now, does the supplier really want to let the factor know about an invoice unless the supplier knows that the factor knows that the rules that the factor is creating for acceptance of the invoices will be met?
I mean, you know, the point is that most of these times there is a pre-existing or a historical relationship. They know that, you know, normally if there's, if the amount is above $1 million and if the money is owed by Intel and by AMD, that they'll get paid. You know, stuff like that. I mean, it's not arising out of a, you know, maybe they'll also have knowledge of some of the rules so that they don't just start, offering invoices that have no chance of getting factored.
Right. So I guess maybe I'm making the problem more interesting than it needs to be. But it seems to me that one of the interesting things about the blockchain is that I can avoid having that existing relationship and have some confidence that the information is going to be useful. So it's not unreasonable for me to assert that, and there's a question mark at the end of this. It's not unreasonable for me to assert that once the factors purchase the invoice, they have the right to see all the information in the invoice. But until they purchase the invoice, that information is confidential between the supplier and the buyer.
That is not true, because nobody is going to buy a pig in a poke, you know.
Right, but if I can give you a matching service that takes care of that, then why wouldn't you?
Okay, fine. Then, you know, some zero knowledge proof runs somewhere.
I don't need a zero knowledge proof.
Okay, whatever. It's some third party.
I'm trying to back out a mechanism and talk about what we want to do rather than what we're limited by the technology. I mean, I've got this cool SGX thing, right? Which we're trying to figure out if it can solve problems like this. And we already have examples.
But why are we going there? Because right now we have
private
this
analytics.
Yeah, so, but you're going into the nitty-gritty of the matching and the factor rules, but there's already a privacy transition happening between when the suppliers' invoices are private to them and individually to the buyers, and then they release it to this group of factors who can see more details of what they're actually financing.
Right, it's a limited exposure thing.
Yeah, I guess, Mick, the way to rephrase Vipin's point is there a real problem here, or the actor is comfortable with the model where the factors have access to the information, and that's how it's working today, and is that a problem, or is that not a problem? Well, if all the parties are okay with that, then...
I think we are focusing on the wrong thing here. I am talking about a very general thing, which is that I have a bunch of private information, which are these invoices, and now I'm releasing it to a bunch of other people bid on them. That's it.
Right, but what is the privacy that you're concerned about in this case? It's really just existence, right?
Not only existence. What are all the? I may have 10,000 other invoices that I don't want to share with anybody.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. So you just have selective. All you're trying to come up with is a way of doing selective release to a specific set of individuals about the existence of documents.
Not existence, the contents. Not just existence. Existence is
Existence is content in this case. I mean, okay. I either hide it from you or I show it to you, right? Either I give you a handle or I don't give you a handle.
I give you a handle and you can see, details that you will use in your rules to not only decide whether to finance it and also how much of a haircut you will apply, right? You're gonna bid. That's the next step, which is... It is not just released to one factor. It will be released to multiple factors, and they all bid. And they nobody sees the other person's bid. Only the supplier sees all of the bids, and they can decide which is the most advantageous for them to take. You know. So those are the two things I've marked in blue. That's it. There's no, it's not like some, computation or analysis type, situations where the disclosure does not happen until some analysis runs, which is what you're suggesting, I take it. Right?
Well, I guess I'm taking this to another level of complexity, yes.
Not only another level of complexity, but a complexity that may not even exist today.
Well, I know that it exists because we've got some other usages that have the same kind of problems.
Okay. So they are saying that they don't want the bidders to see the details of what they're bidding on?
Well, it's not a bidding situation. Well, actually, it is a bidding situation. It's a different case. So I'll give you a simple example of what we're doing. So we've got a driver... So one of the problems right now is that because the relationship between drivers and cars is very transient, coming up with a profile that you can use to give to an insurance company in order to get a rate quote is very difficult. This from a car manufacturer who wants us to solve this problem for them. So what we've built is a way of building a driver profile. So that the cars are able to dump information in about driver characteristics across multiple vehicles. So driver authorizes the car to dump information into the profile. The driver can see the information in the profile but can't change it. An insurance company has their own set of analytics that they want to perform against that information. But they don't really want to see the driver's profile information. They just want to get the rating. So I can execute in a privacy-preserving way a contract, essentially is the rating on that driver's profile without ever exposing the details of the profile.
Yeah, I mean, I get that use case, but that has nothing to do with this. You're trying to create that, map that use case onto this by just focusing
on... No, I'm trying to say that I'm trying to solve privacy problems, right? And
yes.
And what I'm looking at here is an opportunity, you know, in here, if instead of trying to do these based on existing relationships, I do it in the sort of blockchain way, which is that I allow arbitrary interactions between organizations, right? I mean, that is one of the powers of blockchain is that I don't have to have those relationships ahead of time. I mean, I could do the same kind of thing. If I can push that matching function into a privacy preserving way, then I can extend what you're doing here into a new way that doesn't require any of the pre-relations.
Sure, I mean, but you know, this is a model. This is modeling an existing way of doing things. If you want to do that, that will be a harder sell, I believe, than this particular thing, which is, you know, I mean, we are talking about privacy, changing privacy characteristics of certain pieces of information, right? I mean, there is a transition from not knowing what is in the document to be able to know what is in the document. That's the first thing. Second one is I bid on this document, but I don't see other people's bids. It's not an open market, you know. And then in the end, the supplier chooses one of them. These are all, you know, these are all modeling privacy. This is not... this is not the use case you mentioned, which is, you know, you are basically cloaking everything and only producing an aggregate function, some kind of a threshold or aggregate stuff that will, in a very sure way, without exposing the details of what the attributes are, you can make some arguments about those attributes. In order to do the same thing, which is, you know, to get an insurance quote. But
right. But in this case, I mean, I could imagine again, and I'm trying. So my goal is to make this usage interesting enough to justify us using it as the analysis.
Okay. So right. I mean, why don't you bring your thing in and model that? Then,
well, I'm trying to add some characteristics to what you have here. Right.
Okay.
So what if we automate the matching function?
You can, but the point that I'm trying to make is if you do that, then it will be a harder sell, especially if it is opaque.
A harder sell
to the guy like a factor who's actually coming up with millions of dollars, not billions of dollars, to do the buying the invoice. You know, they are putting themselves at risk. So in the end, all of their stuff will depend very heavily on the matching function. So you'll have to prove to them that, one, the matching function is necessary, and that is the way, you know, maybe you can say, oh, it will expand the market or whatever, you know, bring other factors into the picture.
Yeah, it allows you to open the door to additional factors.
Yeah, it could, you know, we could have all those arguments, but I'm telling you that that's going to be a much harder sell than, you know, modeling the existing privacy transitions, which are very simple.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, they're not complex.
May I suggest something? Maybe perhaps we can just capture the existing use case and the existing privacy requirements. And then it sounds to me that, you know, Vipin, what you're proposing is here are the privacy problems in the current workflow and that needs to be addressed if we transition the current mechanism into blockchain. And Mick, I completely see a point in the value of trying to say how can this be improved.
in the future and broaden the market, but maybe we should just take the approach of, okay, what are the privacy requirements from the existing workflow, and you know, how could it be improved as a next iteration of the workflow, which is more complex?
Yeah, I mean, I buy, you know, I'm quite familiar with what you're talking about, Mick. So, you know, this is just modeling what is there. I'm not proposing something completely new, but in that sense, it already has privacy, issues. Like, you know, first of all, today it's all done using documents, paper. You know, most of the stuff is paper, and people have to actually check all those invoices and say, oh yeah, this is something we can finance, this is something we cannot finance. And it takes days for this stuff to happen. In fact, there are I think there are some projects out there that are attempting to deal with this problem, but in other, using other blockchains. And this is only a very small section of the supply chain. I mean, you know, this is just the factoring problem. In fact, we experience this factoring problem ourselves. Like, for example, when I buy something using a credit card from a supplier, it is already pre-factored, meaning, you know, the bank owns that. Bank pays the supplier. You know, if I go buy a cup of coffee, they pay the coffee shop, but then they hold my my debt, and they've already got some kind of a prior experience. So they say, you know, you have a credit limit and so on and so forth. But this is all very, you know, B2C kind of stuff. What we are talking about here with factoring, with billions of dollars and, you know, $3.3 trillion business, is not any of that. This is all B2B business. It is not, and this is a huge money spinner for anybody who participates as a factor, like a bank. This is an existing business. These are the ways in which they do it. I mean, you can propose to them that, you know, yeah, we can improve things by changing the matching function and so on and so forth. But if I just concentrate on those two privacy changing transitions, then we can see whether, let's say, we started out this exercise by saying, how can that be modeled in the DLTs that are under the Hyperledger umbrella? Can this be done? I mean, this is how we started off. So I would like to hear from the others who are silent, like Stan, if he's still on. The person from Oracle, others.
So I kind of see where Mick is coming from. We're kind of trying to look at the more, I guess, interesting aspects of it, and like taking this use case to, you know, to extend its possibilities with the blockchain. But I think to Vipin's point, that if we do that, if we take it away from like today's reality, we'll kind of lose the connection to the use case a little bit, even though we may model more interesting, more generic privacy and confidentiality concepts, we'll kind of we'll have deviated from the use case. And I think it kind of makes sense to start with what to me at least seems like a fairly basic, privacy concern, which is you have data and then you need to extend the visibility to another party. I think the bidding is actually much more interesting. So we're probably trying to look at the entire flow, right? Not the separate sections of it.
Oh, bidding is extremely interesting.
because I think that it's kind of more, this is where more of this private verification, you know, kind of the things that SGX can help with, can do, right? So you have the auctions basically.
Yeah.
Well, unless Vipin, you said that the suppliers actually select the bids, they do it manually, or there are some rules where it's kind of a.
You mean the supplier?
Logic to it, when they pick the bid, when they pick the bids.
Yeah, you can create an electronic market on top of that if you have rules of matching, you know, picking the best bid and so on. But that's. You know, that's a separate issue, right? Meaning supplier accepts bid in the second diamond is what you're talking about now, where it could be made into a, you know, some kind of pick the best deal from what is. Sorry.
Vipin, is that your phone or?
I don't know. I'm inside a conference room. See, that's
okay. I was gonna say there's something really scratching. Anyway, so you know, I think when we come back to, I think okay. So I'm gonna come back around and completely agree with you, Vipin, but for a different reason. And I think what you pointed out is, you know, looking at this problem and thinking about how you would address it with the existing ledgers in Hyperledger, I don't know that any of them can do this. I mean, not in a privacy preserving way, you know, that limits the hosts, or at least not without kind of limiting the hosts on it. So even this relatively simple example turns out to be insanely hard.
Yeah, I get it. By the way, this doesn't mean that I don't have any interest in what you suggested, which is
And my only issue is that. The work we're doing is way, way, way past where the existing ledgers are right now. And that's, I'm looking for stuff that breaks my model. So we can come back and talk about that later. But I mean, coming back and look at these two characteristics that I heard you say, right? One is selective visibility for things that are on the chain. And two is point-to-point information sharing in the bids. Right, that there's specific information between the supplier and the factor, and I assume that a bid represents a commitment that, if accepted, would be executed that way.
Yes.
Even those two, I mean, those two simple things are really hard to imagine how we would do with the existing ledger projects.
Yeah, I mean, I know. So.
Should we include R3 and Corda in here in the analysis? Because Corda is really designed to be able to do this kind of transaction.
In fact, it is already, they are already looking at something like this.
Yeah, I was going to say, because Corda looks like it would be designed to do this well, even though the kind of the more.
So, you know, so this is the factoring part is what I've. What I focused on in this state transition diagram. But there are others, like, you know, the bill of lading being visible and being a fungible sort of not assignable, but what is that other term? It's up there, which is an even more generic thing. Like, you know, it's a negotiable instrument. That means, like, I can offer it, the bill of lading, and people should be able to buy it without participating in some private chain. I don't know how that would be possible, but if it's a negotiable instrument, you know, which is like a dollar bill, that is a different level of, you know, and I know that some guys are attempting to do this in a different it's also modeling that bill of lading. But most of these things ultimately result in recentralization, which kind of breaks the blockchain model. But that's what I've seen. I mean, I'm seeing that everywhere. Like if you look at what CBO, you know, CBOE or your gold thing, it's in the end there is a central player who seem to accumulate trust. But even limited decentralization is, you know, it is definitely possible by having a syndicate, like, you know, the factors and the suppliers, big factors. But for the smaller players, it becomes very, very difficult to then have to get on the chain unless they have some kind of on-ramp. Anyway, coming back to the privacy problem, I think what you're saying is those two things are not easily doable using the current...
Well, selective visibility, you know, you can always do that sort of out of band. You know, I can have a signature for something, I can tell you out of band that, about its existence and provide you with information for it. Binding that information to what's currently in the ledger might be more important.
Might be just hashes. Why is there a crackling? Anyway.
I don't know. That was kind of weird. Somebody else.
Yeah. The documents being, being hashed and so on can work, but then, you know, there has to be a separate channel in which the documents are actually sent, or at least the contents in a verifiable way are sent to the factors, and then the bids, corresponding bids. So that's one way of modeling it, right, in the current system.
Well, I was going to ask if just having the commitments is sufficient, but my understanding was from what you said, Bipin, is that you actually want to put the data itself.
No. I didn't say any of that stuff. What I'm saying is this is the problem, and we can produce a solution that involves certain parts in the blockchain, and certain other parts can be a separate system. It doesn't have to be completely handled. I mean, the blockchain will do what it does best, you know, which is to produce a transparent trail of commitments, and then later used to do resolution of any kind of disputes. And then, I mean, I wasn't suggesting that everything has to be on the blockchain. No.
So one of the things about this that seems obvious, though, back to the crackle. Anyway, one of the things that seems obvious about this is that if you assume institutional trust and awareness, these problems are much easier. That is, they sort of map back into the existing paper-based solutions. But if you give up on institutional trust, things are going to get a hell of a lot harder.
Yeah. Yes, that also becomes a market power, right? I mean, like, if I, as some big supplier, can get the best deal, and somebody else's smaller guy cannot.
I was even thinking of a different. I mean, going back to your notions about visibility, for example, in this case, what I heard you say is that, you know, suppliers will share information with factors because they know the factors and there's a certain relationship and expectation that's existing in that relationship. If we don't assume appropriate behavior in the relationship between suppliers and factors, then how the supplier gives the information to the factor becomes much more challenging. How I do the sort of selective disclosure of the information. Even if I do it out of band, I'm going to have to bind it to some concrete information that's on the ledger in a way, because you're not necessarily trusting that the information, the factor may not trust that the supplier is providing accurate information, for example. So, I mean, there are those kinds of, with the assumption of institutional trust, I think this is, you can do the out-of-band solutions and things like that. But if you give up that assumption, have to bind things on the chain to things that were coming through other channels, and that's going to be a lot harder.
No, Mick, you're absolutely right. But I think even in Vipin's current scenario, he wants access to more information in case there is a dispute. So even in his current model where there is at least partial trust, I think he indicates if there is a dispute, then he wants to have more information, which means that, maybe it's not completely off-chain, right? You need some kind of
integrity. Well, I was going to say, in the case of dispute, that really is lack of institutional trust, right?
Correct. So I think he's assuming that there is no complete trust even in the existing model. Is that right, Vipin?
Yeah, I mean, they can say, this is not the invoice I actually financed, And if I can say, no, you have it, the hash on the chain, and this is related to this document that I sent you on this date, and, that is the only document that will match that hash. Then you can say yes. You can resolve that dispute quite easily. And also remember, the supplier may not release the invoices to be may not offer those invoices to every factor that is on the network. It is not an open market, in other words, right? It is pretty much. Supplier chooses like out of 10 possibilities, okay, release it to these five guys because I've gotten the best deals out of them before and possibly this time too. And only if they go back in the other route, which is no match or they cannot accept the bid because it's the haircut is too much or whatever, then they can go and offer it to another bunch of suppliers. So, there is a back propagation of the decision boxes, back to the list. I mean, then you can actually build in even more things there, which is like, have I got enough money that, and then I abandon the other invoices and I'll attempt to collect them directly, whatever. So these are all, I didn't want to complicate the diagram too much, you said, to make it very simple is tougher than to write up all the flows. So
no kidding.
So our main kind of points of interest here are the two decision boxes. One was the, one was the matching. Mick, you were suggesting it can be automated. The other one is the market, which is the automatic matching of the best bid, which was suggested, of course, by Stan. Other than that, is this in any way useful to us to model privacy and confidentiality or not? This is the question. Are we just wasting our time talking about all this stuff? Or should we be going back to the drawing board for another use case or another angle on the same use case? This is the question.
I like the use case. And not the least of which, because I can extend it out into add some complexity. I mean, if we start with the simple one, we can add some complexity to it that's going to allow me to actually poke on some of the stuff I want to do as well. So I like this. And it's got some very interesting challenges to it.
So how do we proceed from here now? I mean, this is the million-dollar question always.
I'd like to get Hart's take on that. But let's come back and I think starting with this and kind of what's the let's pull Hart in on that because I want to know what his take is on what the sort of analysis is. I mean my approach would be to come up with kind of a data model, the set of transformations on that data model, the information that has to be exposed in each point, and then go back and see if we could figure out how to actually map it down into the different ledgers.
Okay. Are you going to be in LA or no?
Yeah, I'm coming down for the day zero, day one, whatever it is that we're calling it. I've got to leave early on Thursday though.
Yeah, I hope I can convince my guys to send me. Otherwise, it's getting very, very difficult to get people to even, because there are no, I mean, everybody's working on some use cases, but very little to show for it. And these guys want, you know, show me the money, that kind of thing.
Okay.
So,
by the way, we all have that pressure.
Yeah, but bank is a different thing altogether. I mean, you guys at least have an R&D mentality. You have an R&D team. You have like most tech, like I'm sure Cisco, Intel, and Oracle all have a strong R&D presence. Banks were never in the R&D business ever before.
Yeah.
So their reluctance is much more pronounced. They'd rather pay somebody else to do that.
I gotta head off to another meeting.
Yeah.
This is good stuff, Vipin. Even sort of going back and you're right, thinking about how to address this inside, the current frameworks, I think will be a good problem. I want to let's pull Hart in a couple of weeks or in LA or both, and try to make some progress on this.
Sure. I would like to talk to you a little bit about the IoT work you guys are doing.
Okay.
I don't know, how I can reach you if you have time.
Send me an email and we can schedule some time to talk.
Yeah, next week or week after. I mean, this is completely off.
Perfect.
All right.
Yep. That'd be great. All right. Thanks, all. Appreciate your participation.
Bye.
Bye. Bye for
today. Thank you. Bye-bye.